Hi everyone and welcome back to another one of my podcasts. I'm beginning to record this January podcast halfway through December when we seem to have snow in England. Normally we don't get cold till January or February. We could even have a white Christmas, who knows. Well, first of all, let's play you a recording of a tenor I have played you one track of before, but only singing O Sole Mio. Francesco Daddi was born in 1864 and died in 1945. He studied singing and piano and decided to become an opera singer. However, he sort of knew that he wasn't really quite up to being a world star, and he became a very, very useful opera singer, probably in demand by lots and lots of opera houses because he specialized in the smaller roles, sometimes known as the comprimario roles. He was a tenor, but towards the end of his career, he even took on the bass roles because quite often these comic bass roles didn't need really low voices, and he worked with everybody from Caruso and Sembrich and Homer and Marcel Journet and Antonio Scotti when he was in America. He made his debut, however, in Milano in 1891 and created the role of Beppe, the small role in Pagliacci by Leoncavallo. So he was there at one or two historic moments. Though he was a comprimario singer, of course, on record, he was able to sing some of the arias that the star tenor would sing. He was perfectly capable of doing so. And this is, sung in Italian, one of the famous arias by Bizet from Les Pêcheurs de Perles. De mon ami Andormio, sung in Italian. This was recorded around 1911, so he would have been, what, in his 40s, and he sings it very well. I've said this many times, a second-class tenor back then would be a star today. So, Francesco Daddi sings De mon ami Andormio in Italian, 1911, on the Columbia label. Rather a swishy copy, but I think listenable too, and I hope you enjoyed it. He sang rather well, I thought. Well, it wasn't an aria which demanded big volume, and it suited his style very well. Well, we leap forward now, about 17 years. Same country, because that was recorded in the USA, but this is, of course, 1920s, when the word jazz was everywhere, although this would be now regarded not as jazz, but as the dance band of the time. Many 78 record collectors specialise in collecting this sort of stuff, and you can see why. It's got a period charm. It may not be proper jazz, but it's good dance music of the time. Roger Wolfe Kahn was the son of a very rich man indeed, Otto, and he had enough money to do what he wanted. And until the early 30s, when his father died, it seemed to be the pop music of his day, which was, as I say, jazz stroke dance music. At that point, he changed his career and went into the world of aviation, but that's another story. He was only born in 1907, so was only 21 when he made the following record, and it's interesting to note that the tune he's chosen in late 1928 was only premiered in London that same year, so Noel Coward, who wrote the song, must have already been quite a big name for it to have gone over to America so quickly. This is then Roger Wolf Kahn's dance band, and it's a really good band, containing lots of really good musicians, good arrangement, everything's strict tempo, dance music of the time, and it's his version of Noel Coward's Dance Little Lady. Now, while all this was going on in the USA, back in the UK, variety was beginning to appear out of the origins of musical. Because of the effect of radio, people suddenly had to be very, very careful what they said, and the slightest hint of anything double entendre was frowned upon. So comedy became rather, what should we call it, vanilla, rather bland. Nevertheless, there were performers who had been in music hall and were able to carry on in variety and became legends in their own time, though to our taste it may seem a little bit, as I say, harmless for comedy. Back in 1870, and I didn't realise this, but in Glasgow, a young lady called Eleanor Jane Wallace Taylor was born. She was never a really pretty girl, and so the option to be in show business was somewhat limited. Nevertheless, she sang with her sisters at first and then became a clog dancer at the age of 12 in Birmingham. She must have moved, I assume. And it wasn't long before she had adopted her character, which was that of a sort of frustrated spinster. And she managed to put together a grotesque outfit. And she was sort of a female grotesque, which got her noticed. Incredibly tight skirt, which meant that she could hardly move in it, with a hat with all sorts of daft things on top of it, including a candle so she could find a way around. And she became gradually one of the national treasures. Her name on stage was Nellie Wallace, of course, and I've played one of her tracks before. This one, I believe, she wrote herself, I may be wrong about that, and was recorded in 1934, when, of course, she was already in her 60s. It's typical of the type of stuff she would have done, and I commend it to you. The very unique Nellie Wallace singing Three Times a Day, recorded in 1934 on the Decca label.
Once when I was a kid, three times a day, I went to school, I did, three times a day. So dull I used to be, couldn't say me ABC. Teacher took me cross the knee, three times a day. Had sweethearts three times a day. They bought me tea and tarts three times a day. One summer's afternoon, met a chap, got married soon. We used to sit and spoon three times a day. My sister used to sigh three times a day, fearing her old man would die three times a day. He's gone to pay for his life's sins. Now she's married to Mr. Binns. Poor dear girl's expecting gloves three times a day. Once while sitting near a brook three times a day, I had my photo took three times a day. Just as the man was taking me, up there come a bumblebee, who stung me on a Saturday three times a day. Oh, dear, isn't the weather funny? The trying weather. One never knows what to wear, does one? No. Can't cast anything off with safety. No nonsense. Oh, isn't it a shame? The moths have been at my muff again. You know, those moths, they're treacherous. They're treacherous brutes. With every bit of mischief to me. They worry me. Oh, they do worry me. They want watching. One never knows what's the world, you know. But my husband used to sigh three times a day. 'Cause we've got no family tie three times a day. He wants a gal or boy, that's the part that does annoy. All I do is wish him joy three times a day.
Nellie Wallace. Now, what could be more different from that to what we're going to do now? I can't believe that I haven't played this track to you before. It's one of the great recordings of the 20th century, recorded, I believe, in 1929. Marian Anderson is perhaps remembered now as being one of the first black singers to break through, as it were. And one forgets, in saying that, that she was just one of the great singers in the world of classical music. She rarely performed on stage in opera, as you will hear, because she didn't think that she could act. She'd certainly never had any training in acting, so she tended to want to keep to the concert stage, although she did in 1955, just once, at the age of, 58, sing in a Verdi opera the part of Ulrica in Un ballo in maschera. My feeling, my guess, is that she did this as simply a way of improving the chances of young black singers who could then say, yes, a black singer has already sung at the Met. I can't think of any other reason she would have needed to do that, having turned down so many offers in the past of singing opera. The other great moment in her life was when the Daughters of the American Revolutionary, a right-wing sort of female bunch of people in the USA in 1939, refused permission for her to sing to an integrated audience in Constitution Hall in Washington. She was invited instead by the First Lady of the time, Eleanor Roosevelt, and her husband, Franklin D. Roosevelt, to sing an open-air concert on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C., on the grounds that nowhere else was big enough to contain all the people who wanted to hear her sing, according to Eleanor Roosevelt. As I say, this all obscures the fact that she had one of the great voices of the century. I usually don't like opera arias sung in English. It doesn't work. But with Marian Anderson, it doesn't matter. She sang this, one of the few really great arias written for the contralto voice. This one from Samson et Dalila, Samson and Delilah, written by Saint-Saëns. And I'm sure you'll all know this melody in English. It's Softly Awakes My Heart. It may be, again, a mark of racialism that at the time it was released on the cheaper Blum label rather than the Red label that it obviously merited. Be that as it may, it sold in its thousands, understandably, and is again one of the defining versions, if not the defining version on record, of this aria. Marian Anderson. Oh, Marian Anderson, who was born in 1897 and died in 1993, always a singer of great dignity. Well, the next artist, who was also a black American, could well have sung opera, I've always thought, but that's not how he chose to be. Actually, looking at him, he obviously was of mixed race because he had straight hair and almost European features. He was born, in fact, into an upper-class black family, there was such a thing. And at first they wanted him to follow his father's footsteps and become a lawyer. But that wasn't how he decided to be. And part of the reason was because his elder sister decided not to become a teacher or a nurse or anything, but to run a jazz band, one of the first women to front an all-male jazz band. And Cab went on tour with her for a while and was definitely influenced by her. Her own records are wonderful. If I haven't played you one already, I certainly will be doing so. Anyhow, Cab Calloway was born in 1907. He died in 1994, and he was still performing then, well into his 80s. He looked pretty much the same, except perhaps he'd put on some weight and his hair had turned white. But otherwise, he was as he had been. He had all sorts of famous people in his band, like Dizzy Gillespie, Doc Cheatham, Ben Webster for a while, Chew Berry, and my own good friend, Milt Hinton. After he was born on Christmas Day, incidentally, it's going to be, as I'm speaking now, in only about 10 days, it was in Rochester, New York, that he was born, and it was noticed in the house, because his mother was something of a pianist, an organist or whatever, that he had musical talent, and he was given voice lessons from the age of, 15? And, of course, they never intended him to sing jazz, which was really rather frowned upon. He played basketball, he did all the things that people did at college in those days, but after graduation he joined his older sister, as I say, Blanche, on a tour of a black musical revue called Plantation Days. He was very influenced by the style of his sister. He looked rather like her, when I think about it, and it wasn't long before his brand of singing with a, as I say, quasi-operatic voice really took off. And then he met Louis Armstrong and was interested in the scat that he was singing, and ended up inventing his own sort of scat style, which was nowhere near as creative as Louis Armstrong's form of it, but became very popular. And he could sing a meaningless phrase, and then the audience would repeat it to him, and that became his sort of handshake style. At first, he left his university to sing with a band called the Alabamians at the Sunset Cafe. He even was an understudy for a female singer, and again, a good friend of mine, Adelaide Hall. And finally, in 1930, he was asked to front a band called the Missourians, later renamed to Cab Calloway and his orchestra. This was a band that was really lucky because it was managed by Irving Mills, and when Duke Ellington left the Cotton Club, it was this band that replaced it. And of course, that was a huge fillip to his career. Well, they have something of Duke Ellington's growl, so-called jungle sound, but also it's the fronting of Cab Calloway's vocal style that made it unique. To be brutally frank, he wasn't really a musician. He liked to boast later on to later bands that he worked with, all the people in his band, but the truth is, he was just the front man. He sang with them, and that was it. His biggest hit of all, of course, which went throughout his career, was Minnie the Moocher, and it had a sort of drug-related lyric, which, incidentally, was completely fictional as far as Cab himself was concerned. He would never have even thought of taking drugs, but it was a very useful thing to sing about in the 30s and probably made him look cool. As far as I remember, this was first recorded in 1931, so the version I'm going to give you isn't the original version, but was done 2 years later in 1933. But it's pretty much the band as he'd inherited it, as it were, and it's the way that he became known in the USA. So, ladies and gentlemen, the one and only, the unique Cab Calloway.
She was a red-hot hoochie coocher. She was the roughest, toughest, frail, but Minnie had a heart as big as a whale. Ho de ho, de ho,
ho de ho, de ho.
Hi de hi, de hi,
hi de hi, de hi.
Hey de hey de hey de hey. She loved him, though he was cocky. He took her down to Chinatown, and he showed her how to kick the gong around. Heady, heady, heady,
heady, heady,
heady. Oy, 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 oy.
Ay, ay, ay,
ay,
ay,
ay. Gave her things that she was needing. He gave her a home built of gold and steel, a diamond car with the platinum wheels. Hadi, 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 hadi,
hadi, hadi, hadi, hadi,
hadi, hadi, hadi, hadi,
hadi,
hadi, hadi, hadi, she ate was a dozen courses. She had $1 million worth of nickels and dimes.
She
sat around and counted them all a million times. Hi, de hi, de hi.
Hi, de hi, de hi.
And so we come to the last track. This time I'm just going to throw in something I do occasionally, a track from Brazil. I've been involved with various Brazilian things recently, like the Brazilian embassy. I turned up at one of their events, so it's been in my mind. Mário da Silveira Meireles Reis was born in 1907 and died in 1981 in Rio. He was just known as Mário Reis, and he was originally planning to be a lawyer, as somebody from his background might well have been. But he got involved in the world of samba, which really is what bossa nova still was 40 years later. We're talking about the late 20s, however. I understand he may even have been in the same year at university as the great Brazilian songwriter Ari Barroso. Well, whatever made him decide to turn away from the law and start singing, I don't know. But by the late 20s, he was already recording. Throughout the 30s, he recorded alongside all the big names of the time, like Carmen Miranda, Francisco Alves, and goodness knows who else. He was a big star, particularly on the radio. He was very popular. He was known for his gentle tone, not the usual great baritone sounds that seemed to be popular in those days. And even today, because of this, his singing style sounds more modern than his contemporaries. Many people believe that, in a sense, he was a pioneer of bossa nova because of that, and certainly he was an influence on my hero, Jorge Gilberto. In fact, when Jorge Gilberto started out, he was accused of being an imitator of Mário Reis. I came across Mário Reis by accident. The first time I was in Brazil, I went to a 78 second-hand record shop and found a record by him, bought it without knowing who the dickens he was, and only when I got home did I play it and realize I really liked it. Of all the 78s I bought on that trip, this was my favorite. This is one side of that 78. It was recorded, I understand, in 1929. After the war, he seemed to give up his singing career, but Towards the end of his life, he did return to make a few more records in the 60s and the early 70s. I think he's really special. This is, as I say, one of his early recordings from the late 20s. I've always been impressed with the band that accompanies him, which seems to create the rhythm without actually having any percussion, or at least if it is there, I can't hear it. Be that as it may, this is one of Mario Reyes' early recordings. It's called Falsa Sorriso, and I commend it highly to you. I think he's one of the forgotten great names of Brazilian music.
Por causa do sorriso da mulher, o homem faz o que ela quer. Mesmo assim, ela é tão ingrata, meu Deus, que até sorrindo maltrata. O amor é um bichinho que dói, que entra no peito e não dói. Causa que eu padeço, não seja assim fingida, meu bem, que vai ficar arrependida. O amor é um bichinho de rói que entra no peito e não dói. Minha flor, a mulher não sabe o que é o amor. Se ela soubesse, daria um valor a este pobre cantor. O amor é um bichinho que rói, que entra no peito e não dói.
The great Mario Reyes. And so I come to my last track. This is the last of the podcasts I should be doing at the age of 70. I can't believe I'm saying that still. How can I be 70? Anyhow, I'm glad to say that despite the cold I've just come through, that my voice is pretty much the same as it ever was. This year they've been talking about the 50th anniversary of Sgt. Pepper at Abbey Road. It's also the 50th anniversary of the first recording that I made at Abbey Road myself. This demo dates from probably about a year earlier, so I was probably 19 when I recorded this, and maybe even younger when I wrote it. These were the very early days of my songwriting career, when I hadn't got round to writing lyrics yet, I just wrote the song. I had a friend who liked to write lyrics. She's now, I can't believe I'm saying this either, grandmother, and has had a very distinguished career, but not as a lyricist, as an architect. Simone Vardis was her name. It's now Simone Bloom, but it's the same person. She wrote these words when she herself would have been about 17 or 18. So here is a very early Earl Oakin. Well, he hadn't even been to university yet when he recorded this. Or maybe he was in the middle of being at university, I'm not sure myself. Certainly hadn't become a schoolmaster yet, nor left teaching to become what I am now, a full-time entertainer. Before I give you this track. As always, I remind you to please share this podcast, share the link with anybody you think who would enjoy the music of yesteryear. Surely there must be thousands of people who would enjoy that. So spread the joy around, as they say. And as you know, all 100 plus podcasts are still here online, so you can go back and hear any of them. Just scroll down and it gives you a list of who's performing, as it were, on each podcast. Also, very recently, I sold a little bundle of records to a collector of operatic 78s in Australia, and they all arrived intact, so I'm delighted about that. But I have many, many more, and I'd like not to have all these doubles. So if you know anybody interested in collecting 78s, particularly operatic ones, please do get in touch. spats47@ntlworld.com. And with that, I give you the very young Earl Oaken singing a song called Mr. Never Do Right. Until I speak to you on the 1st of February, when I shall have just turned 71, I wish you au revoir.
Realize she loves you.